Welcome to this week's episode of the Sports Community Podcast, a podcast to get volunteers of sports clubs excited, empowered, and motivated. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella.
All right, as mentioned at the top of the show, very, very pleased to have in the studio. And Joe, we don't normally get people into the studio, so we've had to tidy up a little bit, but very pleased to have Megan Densley in the studio today. And very quickly, Megan is the membership manager at Yarra Golf Club and the Commodore of Frankston Yacht Club. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for coming into the studio. Now, a golf club and a sailing club. Hard to think of two more male-dominated sports in the community than golf and sailing.
Well, I suppose so, but I don't know. I've never considered myself different. I have a twin brother. So I've grown up with, if you can do it, I will do it better than you.
the typical that's my twin attitude. So you were just talking before we went to air, and you're saying that you're the youngest Commodore, female Commodore in Australia. So how did that come about?
I suppose I've been involved in my yacht club since I was young. My mum was on the committee. And then as soon as I got the chance, I jumped in and helped out with our own programs and then eventually made it to the committee as a general member. And then, you know, I could see that I wanted to participate and help grow our club into a bigger and better place. So I got on as an executive member and I've worked my way up. I also sailed with the previous Commodore, so maybe wrong place, wrong time. But I was voted in by my peers. So it was a member vote and I was voted in unanimously to be the Commodore of the club.
So, unopposed?
Unopposed. So, no, when I first went in, there was another member who, you know, was much older than me. But, you know, we both got our chance to equally say. And, you know, he's still on the committee assisting us and I value his opinions. But, you know, I was voted in by our members. So
why do you think the members chose someone from a younger generation as opposed to that older, more traditional Commodore of a yacht club? Why do you think they chose that, make that generational change?
I think I probably got in their face and annoyed them. But no, I think, you know, I'm willing to work hard. I'm the first person to say, take the bins out and actually take the bins out. You know, I'm willing to step in and do the roles, but also help and show others how to do them themselves. And passionate, you know, I believe in my club more than anyone else and the first to stand up for it. So I think I'd led leadership-wise that, you know, I'm going to be here for the club for the good and the bad and I'm going to work hard because, you know, I've grown up here and I see that this is a great place to be. Yeah, I think being young probably wasn't a factor that came in. We've got a great culture at our club where, you know, 14-year-olds are having the same jokes with an 80-year-old as, you know, a middle-aged man would be having. So, yeah. You know, I don't think that ever came in with my club that I was female or I was young. Yep. It was I was the right person for the job.
Fantastic. And so you've been Commodore now for a couple of years?
Two. Coming up to the third season, so I'm going up for election again. At this stage, nobody's put their hand up. I don't know if that's because I'm too scary or if that people think I'm doing a great job. So I hope they're great job.
Well, let's go with the latter. And I think it's really important to just go through a little bit of the background to the Frankston Yacht Club that currently your yacht club operates out of a 40-foot container.
Yes. So it has air conditioning. That's fantastic. We're very special right now. So our building has been redeveloped, which meant that they knocked our previous building down almost 2 years ago now, and we've decided to make do. So we say it's BYO camp chair, but we've got a 40-foot container to operate out of and a couple of 20-foot storage containers. And we're doing a lot of walking between our old yacht club and the lifesaving club with our boats. But, you know, we've made it home and we've really proved that the building wasn't why our club existed.
I mean, that's a great point and it's where I wanted to go was in when we do a lot of the workshops, there's a lot of blame put on the building and the facilities for lack of participation and lack of sponsors and lack of members and lack of fun is all to do because our building's not right. You give us a new building, that'll fix everything. But your club's really shown that while the building creates benefits, it's not a lot your club can thrive in a 40-foot shipping container.
Well, yeah, and that was our biggest fear, was that the building would fall down and the membership would disappear with it. So we worked hard to make sure that, you know, we still do member social activities. If it's a sausage and bread that we give away, or, you know, we spice it up and put salad with it. But we try and get our members still communicating with each other, but particularly working together. It's been our biggest key, is that everybody helps with everybody. It's been hard. We have to push our boats, like 164-kilo boat, 200 metres down the beach to avoid the lifesaving club. Our members are getting together and helping each other. They're not walking past. They're going, that's my mate, let's help. And I think it's really built people together. And something we thought would tear our club down, it's really proved that the building had nothing to do with the club itself. Anyone can have a building, but, you know, a tin shed will do. So it's been great. Yeah, it's been excellent to see, and we've increased our membership during this time, which meant that, you know, people are joining our club for that culture that we're there for, not for the buildings that we offer. Yes, we have a promise for a nice, shiny building,
yeah.
But we see that we don't want to see it as a Band-Aid fix. We want to make sure our foundation of our membership is strong before we, you know, have a shiny building to move into.
And one of the things you were saying was that you're continually asking people to come down and experience your club, because that's the strength of your club, is that culture and the interaction. And
yeah, so we're not the shiny glossy club, and if you come down to be waited hand on foot, it's probably not the right club. But I believe that, you know, you should experience the club before signing over your money. We say come down, experience it, see if this is the right place for you and what you're looking for. It's friendly and very inviting. So, you know, as I said, like we do ask you to take the bins out occasionally, but, you know, we reward you with a great community. Everybody does that. It's not just one person that, you know, is at the bottom of the pile. You know, myself as Commodore, I have to do those sorts of things. So it's been great. And I think people see that we are a family and that they want to be part of that. So coming down has been, you know, they want to be members by the time they leave. We don't have to sell it. It sells it to themselves. So,
well, that's pretty powerful, isn't it? So let's go back to the building. Like, so many clubs aspire to get a new building, but you're getting one. How did that all happen?
It's been a long process.
Yeah, always is.
As I said, my mum was on the committee when they started this, and I'm Commodore of the club now. So it has been a long thing in negotiation.
So when we say long, how long do you reckon?
About 15 years since the first talks about it.
Yep.
Once I got the ball rolling, it's been fairly quick. So from probably 5 years, but the building's been knocked down and obviously it's about to reopen. It's never going to be easy. We're working with a council. We've signed over part of our land so they can use it. We've had to build relationships we didn't previously have. But at the same time, it's been great. We've now got a relationship with the council. We've got a relationship with the Life Saving Club. Out of bad things, we've actually built some great things out of it. It's been hard, and we're going to have a big adjustment to make. So an 80-year-old building that was falling down to suddenly we've got a nice shiny building, that might be the hardest thing we have to deal with. So,
well, again, having seen what we see so many times with clubs that do get the nice shiny buildings, that transition and change of behaviour that the members are required to undertake is actually that one of the hardest things, because they feel like that culture that they've got and love, and as you describe, you can traipse sand into the shipping container, but you won't necessarily want sand traipsed into the new building. That's going to be the biggest challenge, isn't it?
And it is, like asking them to take their shoes off and change a habit that they've had for such a long time, to suddenly ask them to do something very different than what they've done. And also, the new building will attract new members. So that's going to be a slight culture shift as well, to make sure that we're introducing and welcoming new members, and also their understanding. The building sort of brings with it a bit of a level that we're not used to. So making sure that we step up to the plate, but also that, you know, we're not giving false advertising basically to the public as well. Changing the membership will be an interesting step forwards. Growing it as your club gets bigger, things need to change. So that will be a struggle, but an exciting struggle at the same time.
What are you anticipating that those changes are going to be, do you think?
Probably a bit more making sure we do things when we say so. you know, a bit more order and structure than where we have been forgiven for something not happening or something not happening correctly. Mm. You know, a larger group, there's more people to account to than, you know, just a handful of people who might make comment. You know, making sure that we have all those things up and ready and running, but also that we keep the membership. So growing a membership is easy, but making sure we have the foundations to keep those new members becoming lifelong members and, you know, hopefully taking over and being Commodore themselves one day. So I think that's going to be, again, a bit of a culture change because we're going to have to start inviting people in. It's like, you know, your tight group of friends you made at high school and suddenly there's a new person in there. You've got to alter your attitudes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And not for a bad thing, but just to, you know, incorporate them into it and other people's ideas and beliefs as well.
Now, you just made a big statement. Growing membership is easy. So that brings in the other half of your role, I guess, well, the other half of your membership manager at Yarra Yarra Golf Club. So, and I agree with you, growing membership in the right situation is genuinely easy. So, you know, why did you say that? You know, like why do you say that growing membership is easy?
Well, I think people have a belief about what they're stepping into and a bit of I'm a member of a club, even if they don't participate, it's nice to be able to say that. And coming into a club, especially if they've come in with a belief in their head that I'm going to be a member of this club, it's not always the reality of when they actually join it. So you need to keep them interested and keep their value for their money coming as well. So, you know, getting them in the door, that's the easiest part. Getting them to stay in the door for the next 10 years, that's the hardest. So,
well, and let's just put this part of the discussion into context. Yarra Yarra Golf Club is one of the elite golf clubs of Melbourne, targeted the very affluent of the community. You know, the joining fee can be upwards of, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. So that concept of value for money is interesting. In what do the members of Yarra Yarra think that value for money is in that context? Because they're paying thousands of dollars for their membership.
Yeah, so it's very different. The environment's different. You go from now we're into an environment where everything has to be perfect. We have to make sure that we have, you know, service is at 110%. If a member talks to you and asks for something, you make sure you deliver on it. There is no if, buts or maybes. You know, we are there to work for the members.
Yeah.
The food quality, the entertainment, social events are on a much grander scale. And that's what they pay for and that's what they expect. You know, the room's always immaculate and we have staff to make sure that that always happens.
Yeah.
Where you go down to Frankston and you're paying $350 for a membership, you know, the environment's a little bit different. You're probably not going to get that service straight away as if you would. But we have a different expectation in our members who join. So, you know, we've gone. So, you know, they expect it. You know, $10,000 is a reasonable cost to join a club to get that level of service provided back for them. You've got to make sure that you meet that for them. But talking to them still, just because they paid the money, you still got to make sure that they are getting what they want. So, you know, when we're renovating the building, do they want a gym to increase their value for their membership? You know, is their coffee the right taste? It comes down to the little things. So, you know, but it's the same, I think, still at a grassroots club. We ask you to pay $350 and I ask you to empty the bins, but what am I actually asking for your money for? So, you know, it's making sure we have the safety boats on the water and that, you know, we have the sandwiches in the fridge and where we can, we help and do those sorts of things. So it's a culture that you join and it's, again, finding that right where you want to spend your money and what you perceive as value for money and making sure you meet that. So
I would have thought being membership manager at Yarra Yarra or any of the traditional elite golf clubs would be one of the toughest jobs in Australian sport because membership worldwide for golf clubs has it's halving and halving again and it's decreasing at a alarmingly rapid rate. So why, let's just talk broadly because I know it's not necessarily the case at Yarra Yarra and I want to move away from Yarra Yarra per se, so we're not talking specifically about that club, but more generally, why do you think golf membership worldwide is decreasing at such a rapid rate?
I think people's attitude about being a club is changing at a rapid rate. Where people joined a club and you just stayed at that club and that was your environment, people now want more for their money. Yeah. And they want different experiences. So a big thing coming into golf, and Americans are probably doing it best, and even Europeans, is that, you know, you join one golf club, but you can play at multiple golf clubs.
Reciprocal rights.
Yeah, so it's been having that. So that's a great thing for your value for money. And you see it happening in Australia now. We're getting developing super golf clubs where clubs are joining, three or four different clubs are joining, and it's not just one sport. So country clubs are a great example. You can play tennis, play lawn bowls. You can even go sailing at some of them, you know. So you're getting more for your money, and you can bring the whole family down and participate, not necessarily together, but at the same time. So it's sort of, you know, what are they getting for their value for money? We're asking them to pay a lot. Are we delivering on probably a short attention span generation that is coming up?
So, yeah. Kid, a notable absence in golf strategy worldwide has been kids. And again, I'm not talking yarra yarra, but more traditionally, golf has been a sport where kids are seen and not heard, particularly at those elite, and I'll use that in inverted commas, sort of courses. And that's the way that the current membership base kind of likes it, but that philosophy is almost destining the sport to irrelevance almost in one regard. How do you see that golf will bring kids into it and have that generational clash, which almost needs to happen? We need to get kids in to pick up the membership growth, but the members don't necessarily want the kids in there.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one, because you do, if you're not replenishing your membership with young people who can give you that 10, 20-year commitment back again, you know, the club is going to die quickly. So it is getting in, and it's changing the attitudes slowly. So, you know, coming in, offering different programs, we found that, you know, having clinics for kids, a much more structured way on the putting greens that doesn't interrupt the members' games, has been a great way to get the juniors and the youth coming in. But also offering deals, so, you know, dad or mum who might have golf clubs hidden away or might be interested in themselves, you know, they can come down and practice with little Johnny and get out there. But putting a little bit of excitement back in it, you know, old traditional clubs are a bit about, you know, they still have a lot of probably not betting, but old traditions of winning and things like that.
Betting.
And yeah, betting and changing it. So it's not that focus. So, you know, it is about the game, about the skills, the techniques, and, you know, being an athlete rather than the drinking at the bar afterwards. So it's changing that attitude a little bit, but blending them together. And that's going to be something that every club, I think, will have a challenge and face in one way or another. If it's sailing, tennis, swimming, you know, there's always going to be that generation gap and how you can slowly merge them together. So I wish I had the answer, because I'd solve all the world's problems. But
well, and that's a very good point, isn't it? Because it's a real issue, and we see it in all clubs, is that generational, or not all clubs, but there's a lot of traditional sports, lawn bowls, sailing, golf, that just spring to mind, that have got that traditional structure, the suit and tie, the club jacket and the pin, and that's not necessarily attractive sort of environment to the kids of today.
Yeah, and you especially find it, golf clubs are particularly bad at that, I suppose, is they still have no phone policies. You know, you have to wear your pleated pants down to your knees and your white socks pulled up, and it's just not the fashion anymore. And it's sort of meeting, you know, it's not saying that you should be wearing inappropriate clothes, but, you know, you can meet the fashion trends, that you can teach appropriate use of technology on the field. So, you know, agree with many members that you don't want to see people talking, you're here to enjoy your sport, but, you know, phones have a great way of tracking and increasing your games and increasing your skills out there, and if not, just paying feedback. And it's also a great marketing marketing campaign.
And promoting your club, yeah, absolutely.
So why, you know, are you taking a picture of that great shot out there, your hole in one, or how fantastic the water looks today? Yeah. All your friends are envious, and you've already, you know, how many people do you have on Facebook you don't even know out there that you've just reached with a simple post?
So, yeah.
You know, it's changing slowly with the times, and balance of both. So
one of the things that is changing in sport is that we're going from our long format games to short, sharp, hour and 20, hour and a half sort of games. And 2020 cricket's a good example, and Jack Attack in bowls. What golf traditionally hasn't gone down that path. Do you see that it will in the future?
It is overseas. It slowly is. So especially Europe and England are best. They play 7 at 7.
Yep.
It takes an hour and a half to play, and it's great. So if, especially if you're working, and most people under the age of 45 are well and truly in full-time jobs and doing 70-hour weeks. So when do they get a chance to use that membership that costs so much? So, you know, they can pop down in twilight after work. They can come in before they go to work and still have time not to enjoy their sport, but not to give up on what their commitments are. And it's a bit more exciting. They're changing some rules. They're making, in golf, they're making the holes bigger, so it's easier faster to get it in. Yeah. So, and even sailing, they're doing the same thing. They're racing closer to the shore. Even just in my time, we used to go out till nearly Geelong, and we're racing much closer. So it's more of a spectator sport to see as well. So I think it's changing, but it's making sure that clubs that aren't content, and often big clubs have a sort of false sense of security that they don't need to do anything and they don't need to adapt to these new things that are coming through. So, you know, a big club isn't always the best club, but sometimes the smaller clubs are, you know, they're way beyond their years and trying to meet the demand and the barriers and lessening them out there, so they can meet these demands. So.
Yeah, cool. Now, we've had a theme over the last 4 or 5 months of women in sport, and really trying to explore this, the inequity of women on committees and women in senior roles or roles of influence, whether they be coaches or whatever. Now, you've got a senior role, whether it's the senior, most senior role in two very traditional male-dominated sports. What have you learned on the journey that, you know, as the... as my daughter is just leaving uni as a budding sports administrator, you know, what's some of the things that you've learned and some kind of words of advice for the next generation of, I guess, sports administrator, but female sports administrators particularly?
Not to take it personally. You know, some people are very traditional, and you have to sort of understand their point of view. But to, you know, come in with the facts and with your research and, you know, be strong in yourself that you have the right skills and the right knowledge and that you're here because you are the right person for the job. I think a lot of people feel that, you know, we've hired a woman because we have to these days. So I think you have to have the confidence in yourself that, no, you're here because you are the best person for this position. Not to argue, it's important to see the other side and the other's perspective and to, you know, fight them with facts. You know, change is difficult for anybody. So you've got to come in. When someone says, I hate that idea, and then suggests it next week, don't take it personally. Just, you know, remember that everyone deals with things differently.
Oh, that's what I do here with Joe and Pam. You know, they come up with all those ideas. I hate it. Then bring it back the next week.
Exactly. I call it boring. So,
they call it rude. But anyway, that's a different discussion.
Yeah, no, I've just like, I've had many people tell me that's a stupid idea. Why would we do that? And then to find out they implemented it themselves. You know, these days I take it as a compliment. But I think I've shown for an example and from, you know, staying strong in my position that, you know, people soon learn to trust you for your opinions and they stop seeing you as male. Well, yeah, they stop seeing you as male or female. But, you know, I've gone from the new female manager at a golf club to, you know, we have a new manager at the golf club. And you have to give them time for change, and let them come to terms with it because they eventually will. So, and you're always going to have people who stand against you and tell you as a girl you should wash dishes. You have to giggle and walk away. So,
do you think it is? I mean, that then implies that imbalance is a sexist, a discrimination type scenario. Do you think it's discrimination predominantly, or is it a cultural issue as to kind of that's the way it's always been, so that's the way
I think it's a bit more of a cultural issue. Like, you do have some people who truly believe that women aren't capable of doing the job.
Yeah.
But most of them, they're just not used to it. And some of them, they see that, you know, the most important job was, you know, their wife stayed home and raised their children, and that was a fantastic thing she did, and you're giving that up. Mm. But it's just, it is. It's a different generation, a different way. It's not that they disrespect women in any way. They're just not used to it. So, and, you know, most men have been fantastic with me and guided me and helped me, and as I said, you know, they saw me as a female general manager, and now they see me as the general manager, the commodore, the membership officer. You know, I'm no longer the girl or the boy. I'm just that person in the role who can do the job, and I showed them with my skills and my abilities that I am that right person
and your ability to deliver. So Megan Densley, membership manager at Yarra Golf Club and Commodore, youngest female Commodore in Australia, but not relevant anymore, just highly competent Commodore of Frankston Yacht Club. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge and your insight with us today.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Lists of jobs, no one to help, people calling, spreadsheets to update, emails to send, equipment to order, functions to organise, too much to do and no time. This is what the day in a life of a sports club committee member can be like. But it doesn't have to be. Sign up to our Leadership Masterclass to learn how to calmly and easily lead your club to achieve big goals while minimising the amount of volunteers' time needed and engaging your whole membership. To sign up, simply visit www.sportscommunity.com.au.
Thanks for joining us on today's podcast. Make sure you visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au to take advantage of our free resources to help your club be successful. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter to keep up to date with all the latest and greatest in grassroots sports. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and be sure to subscribe to our podcasts on your podcasting service, iTunes, Stitcher, or whichever you may use. We would also love to welcome you onto one of our weekly webinars, the schedule of which you can find on our website. And if you're looking for a unique gift, why not give the gift of knowledge by visiting our shop and purchasing one of our training products for someone at your club. Once again, thanks for being part of today's show. I'm Joe Novella.
And I'm Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.